Hi everyone, this is Sam Black with Drafting Archetypes, and today I'm going to talk about the first archetype that I will be covering for Lost Caverns of Ixalan. As always, the notes are available to follow along at patreon.com/draftingarchetypes. At this point, we're very, very, very early in the format. There is data for 17 lands. I don't think it's super reliable, and I also don't think it's particularly good to use for the kinds of decks I'm talking about right now, for reasons I'll get into in a moment. So, as a bit of, ground setting. So, the following decks have really bad stats according to 17 lands data so far. Mono Black is the worst performing monocolor deck, at like a 53% win rate, I think, somewhere around there. Green Black, I believe, is the worst performing two-color deck. And Sultai is the worst performing three-color deck. Which is to say that the 17 lands community as a whole has not been doing very well with colors that I consider to want to be descend archetypes. I personally have had success with Mono Black, Green Black, and Sultai, but the world hasn't. When I say I've had success, just so that we're on the same page, so far with decks that I've drafted that don't include white or red, I have a personal record of 33-13, which I'm pretty happy with. So Descend feels very good to me, but given that I've been doing well with it and the aggregate stats haven't, I'm guessing that I'm doing something different from everyone else. So rather than study which cards people have been failing at less with, or failing less with, by seeing which cards they've been using well in these archetypes, I figured I would just speak to the cards that I've been prioritizing and the strategies that I've been employing in these decks. So the cards that I'm looking for are not necessarily the cards that have the best win rates on 17 lands in these colors, or the best performances even in archetypes of these colors, but they're cards that I believe play coherently together. So to me, Descend is pretty easy to enable, but I really want to prioritize actually doing that. And this archetype for me is really all about creatures with enters the battlefield abilities. I don't necessarily care all that much what they do when they enter the battlefield, but most of the creatures that do something when they enter the battlefield are more appealing to me than most of the creatures that don't do something when they enter the battlefield. There are a few exceptions, but that's kind of what I'm looking for. And like, it really makes sense because I kind of want my creatures to just trade off with basically anything as much as possible, because then they're in the graveyard to fuel my other stuff that wants things in the graveyard. And they're also in the graveyard so that I can potentially get them back with another chance. Another chance is the two and a black instant. You may mill two cards, then return two creatures from your graveyard to your hand. I believe this card is kind of the cornerstone of this whole archetype space. Another chance is one of the most important things going on for me. I could see myself happily playing as many as four copies of Another Chance. I generally like this kind of card in theory, and then in practice, it ends up being pretty awkward because sometimes you play against an opponent who's not interested in killing your creatures. Fortunately, this archetype doesn't really care if your opponent's not interested in killing your creatures, because in addition to Another Chance itself milling you, there are a lot of other cards that you want to play that mill you. So Another Chance becomes kind of this weird card draw slash tutor, but really like raise dead, but where some of your creatures have like spell like effects, so it just lets you reuse all of your best stuff, but where sometimes reuse is actually you're casting it the first time because you started by milling it and that's how you found access to it, rather than like you played it and it died and you got it back. That whole process can be pretty slow. So to me, Another Chance is one of the like best and most important commons in this archetype. This is not my first time playing decks with a heavy recursive element in Limited across multiple sets. And these decks are really good at magnifying the impact of the best creatures you've drafted, which is to say exactly how strong this kind of deck is going to be a function of Like, how good are the three best creatures you've drafted? If the three best creatures you've drafted are all, like, you know, above 60% win rate type cards, then your deck is probably going to be very good. If your three best creatures are all, like, 58% win rate type cards, then it's possible that, like, you're going to be, you know, spinning your wheels a lot and reusing creatures that just kind of are medium cards, and your deck's not really going to be any greater than some of its parts. You're not going to be able to, like, leverage high impact situations out of your ability to, like, dig for your best cards. So this is a good place to be when you open any sort of green or black or blue or a combination of those things bomb rare. And it doesn't matter all that much if it's an 8-mana bomb rare, like the Bringer that Living Death's when you cast it, or if it's a 3-mana bomb rare, like Priest of the Schism. You can, like, you might draft the deck very slightly differently depending on which of those creatures you're, like, finding and potentially recasting, but any ability to keep presenting some kind of, like, very high-impact creature is going to play out pretty well. You can supplement the, like, bomb rares with really, really strong uncommons. Things like the Benthosaur that likes caves, the 6-mana 4/4 that looks at X cards where X is the number of caves you have and then puts two of them in your hand, is a really strong creature to recur. Chupacabra Echo is a really strong creature to recur. And even the Surveyor, the 4-mana 3/2 uncommon that searches for a basic or cave and puts it into play tapped, is somewhat valuable here. It's not as game-winning, but it can definitely help you, like, set up, and I think it's a very relevant part of this kind of equation. You won't necessarily, like, there can be things that put you in this space, and then you, like, hope to get past some good rare, but for the most part, if you're trying to figure out, is this a good time to try to draft this archetype, starting with a really, really good rare creature that's green or black would be a good reason to try to get into this kind of space if you're, you know, on the fence. You really want to prioritize the enablers, which are the self-mill cards. Again, if you have a bomb rare, then the self-mill is going to be the best way to get it into your graveyard, and then from your graveyard, you can get it into your hand using either another chance or the raccoon, the green uncommon, the three mana 3/2 that returns a permanent from your graveyard to your hand if you have descend 4, Cody of some sort. It's another very, like, another one of the, like, premium creatures I'm looking for. The common enablers that I'm valuing very highly, another chance, Deathcap Marionette. That's the one in a black for a 1/1 death touch ETB you can mill two. Mineshaft Spider, this is three in a green for a 3/4 ETB you can mill two. And even Song of Stupefaction. Song is the kind of card that I typically never play. Like, it's an aura that doesn't exactly deal with a creature, but when you attach mill two to it in a deck that cares about the mill two and wants permanence in your graveyard, I found it to be a pretty acceptable way to, like, buy time and turn on my other stuff and get to the late game. It's not as high a priority as the other cards that mill two when you play them, but it's a totally acceptable card to play here. The Spider, I think, is really underrated and really, really strong. These decks are generally more interested in blocking than using removal, and can be really good at gumming up the ground thanks to Deathcap Marionette and the Capybara and Echo of Dusk. Those are the two-drop green and black creatures that get better when they descend. So the Capybara becomes a 4/3 and the Echo of Dusk becomes a 3/3 lifelink. Those can block most things pretty well, but then this deck can really get torn apart by flyers. But very few flyers attack well into Mineshaft Spider, and then Mineshaft Spider is also advancing your game really well. I started off a little low on it, and then I realized, like, wait, if 2 mana for a 1/1 death touch mill 2 is good, I'm, like, basically paying a mana for the mill 2. So, like, 4 mana for a 3/4 reach mill 2 should be exactly where I want to be. And So I've started playing that more and I've been really happy with it. So beyond those, I want to talk a bit more about the premium commons for each color in the Descend deck. So roughly in order, in green, I'm looking for Poison Dart Frog, which is the 2-mana 1-1 that taps for a mana of any color, has reach, and you can spend 2 mana to give it Death Touch. The deck can be a little clunky. The deck might want to splash. Poison Dart Frog is a really good way to not fall behind and like cast your 4 and more mana cards early and cast your splash cards and stuff like that. Also, like typically, if your opponent can kill a mana creature on time, they generally want to. So if they do that, it descends. And then it's also another way to like block a big flyer in the mid to late game. You can just give it Death Touch and trade off. Mineshaft Spider, I've already discussed. I think it's the second most important green common. Pathfinding Axejaw is 3 and a green for a 4/3 explore. It's very, very, very similar to Mineshaft Spider. Like they're both good body 4-drops that potentially fill your graveyard. They give you a slightly different kind of value. Pathfinding Axejaw is probably better than Mineshaft Spider if your opponent doesn't have flyers. If it does, it's worse. Since I feel like I need the help more when my opponent does have flyers, I prioritize the spider more highly, but they're both very, very similar good cards. Next, Basking Capybara. I think that that plays a really good long game, and so having some 2-drops that are a reasonable board presence can help a lot. Also, when you have good self-mill, sometimes the Capybara turns on pretty quickly and you can kind of like go beat down and get some free wins in some spots against other slow decks. So I've liked that. That's the 1 and a green for a 1/3 that gets +3/+0 when you descend. 4. In the Presence of Ages, that's the look at the top 4 cards, put up to 1 creature and or up to 1 land from among them into your hand and the others in your graveyard. This helps you hit your land drops, helps you find your good creatures, and helps fuel your graveyard all in one card. It's an instant, which is nice. It's sometimes you're only going to draw one card off of it, but usually when you do that, you're still fueling your descend pretty well, as long as you don't have too many other non-permanent cards in your deck. I don't love spending mana in this format to not impact the board, but if I'm going to, this is a good way to do it. I want to make sure that my like early game is solid to play in the Presence of Ages, because I really do think there's a high cost not impacting the board. But I think, again, this card is very, very good for making sure that you're well set up, just in every way you want to be set up. Nurturing Bristleback is the 7-mana Forest Cycler, 5/5 that makes a 3/3. Good to have something to do in this late game that you're trying to stall for. When you're playing a lot of recursion, you want just some very high impact creatures you can recur if the game is going long and grindy. And then also, if you Forest Cycle it early, you're putting a card in the graveyard for descend and hedging, especially if you're splashing, with some extra cards that kind of make sure you have your colors, even if you don't really want to be cycling them early, decreases your fail rate. And then Whatley's Final Strike is the good green removal spell that I'd be interested in. I honestly don't think I've played it in these archetypes yet, but I don't see any reason I wouldn't want to, especially if you have Deathcap Marionette, it becomes like a hard removal spell. And then those are the green cards that I think are premium, or that I'm looking to play. If you end up playing like a 3-1 Explore or some other cards that kind of make sense in the archetype, it's not the worst if you have a 6-mana 7/7 potentially, if you don't have other top end. But those are cards I'm looking for. And again, roughly in that order. There's some wiggle room there, but roughly in that order. So black, again, roughly in this order. Another Chance I've talked about extensively. That's the mill to get 2 creatures back. Deadweight. This is, has been printed several times, but it's particularly good in this set because it fuels descend. This is black for an enchant creature that gives enchanted creature -2/-2. I think killing small creatures is very valuable in this set. There are a lot of aggressive decks that rely on their cheap creatures to get in early damage or just like play flyers that you need to answer. There are also some like really impactful 2/2 rares that you need to be able to kill. Rares or uncommons in the case of Captain Storm. So Deadweight is a way to get a removal spell in your deck without decreasing your permanent count so that your mill stuff is still turning on your descend. And then it also, you know, when you cast it, it usually goes straight to the graveyard to really turbocharge your descent. Join the Dead. This is a removal spell that kills more different things. This is 1 BB instant, gives -5/-5, or if you've descended, -10/-10. This kills most creatures most of the time. Costing double black is significant. Like, you need to make sure that your mana can support that well, but if you can, it's one of the best rates available on a reliable removal spell in the format, and one of the cards I'm most willing to play that's like not a permanent in these decks. Deathcap Marionette, that's the 1/1 death touch that mills you for 2, and then Echo of Dusk is the 2/2 that gets +1/+1 in lifelink if you've descended. Those are both, I think, important 2-drops just to like stabilize, make sure that you get to the long game. Echo of Dusk is really important to not lose to aggressive decks. I often just trade off with it, but the 3 life matters a lot. And then sometimes I recur it because life is more important than things that the other creatures offer me. There are a bunch of other black cards that like are playable in this kind of space, but if I'm not mono black and I am descending, those are the only commons I really care about. So with the blue commons, I have a bit less experience with blue, and I feel like blue can approach the game more differently than the other colors. Like, sometimes I'm splashing blue in a green-black deck, and other times I'm, like, blue-black, and blue-black can have a bit of a range of game plans. So I didn't really feel comfortable trying to rank the commons in order, but broadly speaking, the cards that I'm looking for in this kind of deck are the bounce spell that makes a map, Brackish Blunder, Didact Echo, the 5-mana 3/2 that draws a card and then has flying if you've descended, Frilled Caveworm, the 4-mana 2/5 that gets +2 power if you've descended. That card is pretty impressive. It's just a very large creature. Inverted Iceberg, the mill 1, draw 1 artifact that can craft into a 6/6. Marauding Brine Fang, the Island Cycler. Orozca Puzzle Door, the 1-mana artifact that you can spend 1 and sack it to look at 2 cards, put 1 in your hand and 1 in your graveyard. And then since it itself goes to your graveyard, it generally contributes 2 to descend. Out of Air, which is the counter spell that's 2 to counter a creature, 4 to counter a non-creature, is a reasonable interactive spell. River Herald Scout is the 1/2 explore for 2. Sage of Days, the 3-mana 3/2 that looks at the top 3 cards and you can put some of them in the graveyard. Unlucky Drop, the 4-mana instant that puts a creature on top. And Waterwind Scout, the 3-mana 2/2 flyer that makes a map. Long list of cards. In some ways, it's more important to consider which cards aren't on that list, but that's even harder to talk about. Broadly, you're looking for interaction, cards that fill the graveyard, and cards that pay you for having a full graveyard. Some other things. Hoverstone Pilgrim is the 5-mana 2/5 ward 2 flyer that you can spend 2 mana to put a card from target player's graveyard on the bottom of their library, or target card from whatever. It can hit you or your opponent. I value this card very highly. It's actually pretty rare that you need it to avoid decking yourself, but it does come up, and it's nice that if you have it, you generally don't have a temptation to play more than 40 cards, and you can like aggressively mill yourself and not have to worry about like, oh, do I need to slow down in case this game gets grindier than I expect? I've had decks that don't have it where I have to choose no on the like mill 2 stuff because I have like, I don't know, 14 cards left in my library, and I basically have everything I need. There might be some other creature that would be nice to find in my graveyard, or maybe it would be good to get to like a slightly higher descend number just in case it matters for something. But it's generally safer not to mill. If you have the Pilgrim, most of the time you can just be like, yeah, keep milling, because if I deck myself, it's like actually good. So its existence lets you take slightly more powerful lines in games, even when it doesn't actually end up coming up. And then aside from that, it just plays really well in the kinds of like long grindy games you're looking to play, because it's both like a flying blocker that resists removal, and also attacking your opponent's graveyard is just like more likely to matter when you're like playing these long grindy games. So I like that one a lot. I value it super highly. I'm willing to take it early because I have found that it generally doesn't table, and I really want one if I can get it. I'm sure that at some point in a future episode, I'm going to go a lot deeper into caves, but my quick hits early on caves are, I don't think the cave deck is quite a thing the way that like the gate deck was a thing in that set, in that I don't think that there's a deck where you're just like full five color, all the payoffs, and that's like the sole thing that your deck does. I think that the way that caves work is you generally want to have a base two-color deck that has its own consistent game plan, and then also has 5 to 9 caves and 1 to X cave payoffs. And caves ends up being usually a bit more of a sub-theme rather than like the whole identity of a deck. So I value caves pretty highly throughout the draft, regardless of like which payoffs I have, because I would like to be in a position to use them if the opportunity presents itself. Like in this kind of grindy deck, I would really hate to have to pass a Benthosaur, because Benthosaur is going to make my end game so much better. Benthosaur is the 6-mana 4/4 that draws 2 cards or whatever. Somewhere between draws 2 cards and casts Dig Through Time on an ETB. I'm going to take, you know, premium commons above caves, but then caves above anything that's not a premium common. So I draft them very similarly to the way that I draft lands in most sets where I'm interested in lands for any reason. Aside from like taking caves, making it easier to potentially use cave payoffs that happen to be going around the table, lands that sacrifice themselves are a good way to enable descend. I've had spots where, oh, my descend's not quite on, but I kind of need it to be, so I guess I'm going to just like spend this turn sacrificing a cave for whatever thing the cave does to turn it on. Usually my descend is on by the time I can do that, but not always, so it's nice failsafe. And then I also think that like the discover caves, I just think they play well, especially if your deck either doesn't have mana sinks or is planning to play a really long game. I've noticed in Limited, sometimes you get to a spot where you've kind of like stabilized and you're trying to like, or you're trying to stabilize or trying to turn the corner, but you've been behind and you're like, okay, if my opponent just like draws a land or like misses like one of the next 2 or 3 turns and I keep like drawing gas, like I can probably turn this around, but I'm like a little bit behind, and if my opponent's keeping pace with me, I'm not going to be able to catch up. And sometimes I'm like in that spot, and then I realize, oh wait, they have like 2 or 3 discover caves, so they just can't miss. So I'm like basically just going to lose to those caves. And just like getting to a late game where every turn you can do something, either because you draw a spell or because you can sack a cave, it matters quite a bit. So I don't know. I like making sure that I have some caves. As I mentioned earlier, I try to not be solid 3-color. I prefer to be 2 with a splash. Doesn't always go that way. Sometimes, you know, you get good fixing and you get highly paid for having the extra color, but when I can, fewer colors is better because the fixing in this format is not great. It's not super cheap to have more colors in your deck. And I also like to draft these decks in such a way that, you know, I'm always prioritizing having inevitability, of course, but I like to have the ability to have aggressive draws that, you know, punish your opponent for stumbling or whatever. I've gotten some free wins with aggressive draws in these kind of decks either, just because I have like some blue flyers and they just attack and push damage. Or I like turn on Capybaras or Echo of Dusk early and just kind of like run someone over. I don't expect a lot of my games to go that way, but you are going to have a better win rate if you can get the free wins where they're offered. And then the one other thing I want to talk about is mono black. because I think it's a bit different, but kind of like in a similar space. And I think it's just worth knowing about because Black doesn't have a great win rate and hasn't been drafted very highly so far. And once people start looking at the data, I can only imagine that it will be drafted less. So knowing that like Mono Black is a cohesive deck by itself is, I think, like a reasonable thing to be on the lookout for, basically. You can do all of the Descend stuff, value all the same cards I'm talking about, but there are a bunch of Black cards that I didn't list on the stuff that I'm looking for in Descend, but that I think plays well in Mono Black. And basically what's going on here is that Black has this like objects and sacrifice theme that it's kind of trying to do with White, but White's not really contributing that many sac outlets to the equation. And there's not really that much pull to be White Black rather than like just Mono Black if you're doing this thing. And so you kind of end up pairing the Descend stuff. Like, all of the core payoffs that I'm talking about, like this Another Chance Marionette, Deathcap Marionette engine exists in Mono Black. So instead of pairing it with kind of like other Descend stuff from another color, you can pair it with objects that are good to sacrifice and ways to sacrifice them from Black. And then if you just kind of play like a few of each of the like different kinds of Black commons, you end up with a pretty cohesive deck. So you just pair this stuff with like the snail, and the snail is the 1/1 that makes them exile a card from their hand, and Tithing Blade, the artifact that makes them sacrifice a creature. And then you get to play any of the creatures that sacrifice something. So the 1/4 that sacrifices to drain them, or the 4-mana 3/3 that sacrifices to get Menace and a +1/+1 counter. And then you can play the Draft, the 1 in a black, lose a life, draw a card artifact that also loses a life and draws a card when you sacrifice it. And I think that I don't really want to get into that kind of stuff when I'm playing Black with another color, when that color is blue or green, because it's a little too clunky and fiddly, and I'd rather just be like casting big creatures in green and black, or green or blue. But if I'm Mono Black, then my mana is a little smoother and my curve might be a little lower, and I can afford to do some of the like more fiddly stuff, and then, you know, kind of like loop my best creatures. This is again a situation where you need some like really good black uncommons and rares. Chupacabra Echo, of course, and then also the like Abyssal Gore Stalker or whatever it's called, the 6-mana 6/6 that makes both players sacrifice two creatures, I think plays really, really well in Mono Black and not so well in like green black or green blue. Mono Black is just more looking for this like big thing to occur and more likely to have little creatures to sacrifice. So that's basically what's going on there. Similarities and differences. And that's it. So, turning this over to chat for questions. Want to thank my newest patrons at patreon.com/draftingarchetypes. So thank you so much to Andrix and Sam. Really appreciate the support. As always, if you're finding this valuable and would like to give back, or you'd like to get access to notes or my draft logs or coaching discounts or what have you, check out patreon.com/draftingarchetypes. Okay, so first up, when I'm referencing caves, is it specifically the Discover ones? So the discussion about the Discover caves, of course, was about the Discover ones, but no. So overall, I'm mentioning more than the Discover ones. So there are the two common colorless caves that enter untapped and can sacrifice to do something. One puts one is the Filter land that puts 2+1/+1 counters on something, and the other is the Shire Terrace, the land that sacrifices to search for a basic. Both of those can help with splashing and can also help with descending by sacrificing themselves for the things that they do. And then both can be relatively low-cost ways to fuel the uncommon payoffs. So I'm looking for all the common caves for those reasons. And then the uncommon caves, Typically, the uncommon caves I'm more interested in if I already have some other cave stuff going on, because the uncommon caves are often kind of like more cave-like payoff, like the one that lets your caves tap for colored mana, or the one that becomes a 3/3. I think the cave that exiles stuff from the graveyard is kind of interesting as like a card that's kind of good in the grindy mirrors to exile your opponent's graveyard, but it's a relatively low priority for me. Like, I'd rather have most of the common caves than that. I may have missed it. Did you touch on Malicious Eclipse? That's 1BB sorcery. All creatures get -2/-2 and exile your opponent's creatures. This card is an interesting one because it's, you know, super swingy and matchup dependent. It's going to, like, save you or win the game in some matchups, and in other matchups it's not going to do anything. I value it a lot more highly in best of three than in best of one. In best of one, I'm willing to play it depending on what my two drops look like. If I can manage to have, like, mostly Capybaras and Echoes, and then turn those on with, you know, three and four mana cards that mill me, then I'm a lot more interested than if I have to, like, have, like, a bunch of Deathcap Marionettes and Poison Dart Frogs that I need to, like, make sure I'm not killing my own stuff with it. Overall, while I acknowledge that, like, Eclipse can definitely get you some free wins against certain archetypes, I don't prioritize it because I think that it's just, like, too likely to be awkward in a best-of-one situation. Will Graveyard Hate become effective against Descend? Yes. I mean, the Graveyard Hate is very good against Descend. There's not very much of it, but when I have, like, if I've played, like, the rare 2/2 that taps for mana of any color and spends 2 mana to exile a card from a graveyard is an absolute nightmare if you're playing Descend and can't deal with it. I've certainly lost that guy. This is why I value those cards, because they're, like, great mirror breakers in Descend mirrors. I think that there, like, aren't so many that it's, like, a huge problem for the archetype, but it is a reason to make sure that you have some removal. Next up, are you taking another chance very highly with the thought that you can soft force this archetype and the chances will be very important? Or are you getting pulled into the archetype by early rare / top creature and then prioritizing chance? Yeah, I'm not at a point where I'm looking to, like, pack one, pick one, another chance and move in, because I do think that the archetype really hinges on having, like, those good creatures to get back with chance. So once I have those things, then I'll take chance highly. Like, it's not, it wouldn't surprise me at all to pack one, pick three, another chance, but it's not where I want to actually start a draft. Are any of the If You've Descended This Turn cards worth including in the Descend X archetype? Yes, but only because the rare 1/1 goblin exists. In general, I'm not very impressed by the If You've Descended This Turn cards. I think that, like, the black commons with that text are pretty bad. And I have played against a deck that used that stuff pretty well, but I still think overall it just asks too much and rewards you too little. So I'm not looking to play those cards. Similarly, the 3-mana 2/2 flyer that mills when it attacks seems like a good enabler, but again, it's too much of a Windrake if it gets killed. It's too easy for it to die to a dead weight or either of the red shocks, not even the Abrade, the Torch, or either of the artifacts that does 2 damage. And I'm not generally looking to open myself up to that kind of negative exchange. From a preference standpoint, how strong does your first few picks have to be to pull you off this archetype? Oh, not very. I mean, like, if I see a, you know, good rare or uncommon in another archetype, I'll certainly do that. I'm not in any way looking to force this currently. I've drafted it a vast majority of my drafts because I think these colors are possibly correctly, but very underdrafted. And I'm sure it's partially just a function of the packs that I've opened. But it feels, you know, somewhat coincidental. Like, I literally haven't drafted white yet. And it's not that I'm trying to avoid white. It's just I've opened good rares in these colors, and I haven't opened rares that are pulling me into white. Does Corpses of the Lost fit into this deck? Yes. Very, very, very much so. Corpses of the Lost is the one in a black rare that you have to discard or sacrifice something, and then it has power and toughness equal to the number of permanents in your graveyard. I have played that even without, like, great, like, free permanents to sacrifice, because it's just so big, and I've been very happy with it. I've cast it, discarding a card on turn two or three, and then, like, attack for five the next turn or something. It's very good. Is Chupacabra the card that's most likely making me going into this archetype? Yes, because it's uncommon and black and really wants to be in exactly this thing and powerful. I think I'm going to wrap it up there. So thanks for listening, and I hope this helps clarify what this, how this deck works and what you're looking for. And next week I hope to be back into swing of things a bit in terms of at least having a few options of archetypes I feel comfortable with and interested in discussing for Patreon vote. Again, I'm going to be pretty selective about what options I put up there, and I'm not necessarily going to try to go through every two-color pair so much as just anything that feels like a theme that I have found myself coming back to. So I've found this set to be, after my early access experience, I was a bit worried that it would be just, like, very aggressive. And I know that those, like, the aggressive decks have been performing well, but given that I have struggled with them and succeeded personally with more controlling decks, I'm kind of currently pretty happy with the pace and variety that feels viable to me in this format. So I'm interested to see how that develops, and really enjoying the set so far. So anyway, that's it for now. Have a good week, and I will be back at my regular time on Wednesday next week. Bye for now.
Prepare for light speed.